Morning, everyone. Happy Sabbath to you. Another gorgeous Sabbath day. So glad to be here worshiping with you. I just love the singing, the music, and it's so neat to hear the focus of these songs this morning on what God has created. Magnificent, right? Yeah. There are 100 billion of those out there that we know about. 100 billion. That's a lot. There are, what, 6 billion people on the planet? Or 8? Okay, there you go. There you go. So each person, you can do the math, but we all get about, what, 12 of those to ourselves, each person? 12, 12, 12, 12. Galaxies. We ought to be able to name those things with our name, don't you think, or something? I don't know. I'm going to share a few thoughts today. I was in the mountains 2 weeks ago, and we were at anywhere between 11,000 and maybe 14,000 feet elevation. We camped at a camp right around 12 one night and another one at about 11.5. When you're at those altitudes, the stars are much, much brighter. Dallas knows that. He's been up there. We were near Mount Langley, which I believe you climbed. And there was no moon. And the stars were just intense, and the Milky Way was just like cotton candy, you know, across the sky. You could see all the dust in the Milky Way. We looked down at the center of our galaxy, which is to the south of us, which is in Sagittarius, and we could look right into the heart and in the middle of the Milky Way galaxy, which is just buried in clouds and clouds and clouds of stars. The Milky Way galaxy is estimated to have about 4 billion stars. And so our sun is one of those, okay, of those 4 billion. The Andromeda galaxy, which we saw in one of the earlier slides, has about twice that many stars, they estimate, in it. And who knows how many planets are orbiting these other stars. Stars come in all shapes and sizes. There are blue ones, there are yellow ones, there are red ones, there are big ones, little ones. There are dim ones, there are bright ones. Very interesting study all by itself. So we sat out there. It was a Friday night. It was getting dark. The sun had just gone down. And we were out there looking for the first objects to become visible. And the first thing we could see is Jupiter, which is just like a little bright dot kind of southeast of us. And then right next to it was Antares, which is in the Scorpion, which is a bright red star. It's a huge, huge, huge red star next door to it. And then we saw, a little bit later, we saw Saturn, which is a little bit kind of to the left of Jupiter in the southern sky. And the stars just began coming out. And it wasn't long. And we probably stood out there, eight of us, for probably 2.5 hours, just talking about what we were seeing and looking at the immensity of this canopy above us and just lost in conversation and wonder about what it was and how massive it was and how significant. And here we are on this tiny little planet called Earth, looking out. I want to just share a few thoughts. Today I would like to focus on a couple things. Number one, you know, God is our creator. We talk about God as our creator, but I want to talk a little bit about his creation, which is what we're seeing here, a piece of it. And then I want to talk about what science tells us about the cosmos that we live in. I want to give you some facts about that or what we accept as facts about what we know and what we don't know. And for the gaps in the scientific understanding, I want to show you how large those gaps in scientific understanding are. And those people who study astronomy and the study of cosmos accept the fact that there are gaping holes in the theories that are widely accepted today, okay? So we're going to talk about what I call God-sized holes, okay? Because there are such massive holes in the theories that we have today about the cosmos that you have to leap across them one way or another. You can take a step across a God who fits that spot, or you can take another step in faith across a gap in the scientific theory. When we were standing in that circle, these are some of my closest friends, and some of them have a belief in a God, and some of them don't. And some of them I sense an openness to his spirit, and some of them I don't. And we just sat out there talking, and my friend Mike, who is part of the group, we're all having this conversation. He says, "So Marty, do you have trouble reconciling the scientific understanding of the beginning of mankind and the universe with your faith?" Okay? And I told my friend Mike, no, I don't. And I want to share with you kind of the underpinnings of that. And each of you I know probably have different thoughts on this subject, but I'm just going to share some personal thoughts on them from my puzzling about these big questions. Okay? So I told Mike, I said, no, I don't. Some of us come to science with a belief in a creator God. And that's this perspective that I have. My personal view is the further science advances, the closer it will get to the creation story. The one illuminates the other. Okay? You can come to science with the opposite view. You can come with to science with a determination that there is no God. And you can use that same information to prove and to make that case. Okay? And for those who come to science with that viewpoint, those lines will never converge. The creation story will never illuminate science, and science will never illuminate the creation story. But if the creation story is true, which I believe it is, the more we understand about the cosmos, the more we're going to be able to reconcile these two. And there are gaps in our understanding, obviously, but it's wonderful to see science in the movement of science and the advancement of telescopic views and all these other views of the universe that we have. It's wonderful to see these because, as a believer, that's telling me more and more about my Creator. And as I see the stories, I'm always puzzling in my head, how do I reconcile Genesis 1 with what I know from reading my astronomy magazines and other information that I read? It's very interesting to me to puzzle about that. So again, I'm an enthusiast of science, and I am a believer in a creator God. But there are a lot of God-sized holes, what I call God-sized holes in our understanding of how, in our modern theories, modern scientific understanding of how our universe came to be. We live in a time of unprecedented scientific discovery. And I'm going to just cite a few facts here about our universe. In the 1990s, I think it was 1992, Hubble was launched, the Hubble Space Telescope. It circles, it's in orbit around the Earth. Its mirror is 2.5 meters tall, which is about this tall, okay? And it completely and utterly changed our understanding of what's out there. Because for the first time, we had unobstructed views without the atmosphere in place obstructing us at all of the universe. And this modest size mirror by today's standards gave us unbelievable pictures of what was out there. We also have sent probes and rovers, right, to Mars, and probes to Jupiter and to Saturn and numerous other planets, Pluto most recently, and on and on. But in the next 5 years, you can't believe the types of equipment that is going to be viewing the universe. There is a very large telescope under construction right now. It's going to come online in 2025 in Chile, on top of in the mountains there, which has a size of its mirror is over 39 meters. Okay, if you compare that to the largest scope out there, it's more than double the diameter. And if you compare it from an area standpoint, it's many, 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 many times the area of the modern telescopes. Further, these scopes are computerized. They put a laser, point a laser at the target, and the optics adapt to correct the image for the distortion in the atmosphere. So what you get is you get a corrected picture of what you're looking at. You still have the atmosphere which absorbs light, okay, so you don't get as much light as you would if you were outside the atmosphere, but you could get corrected pictures of it, which is phenomenal, because it's always the bane of looking through the atmosphere is the way it distorts the views of things that come through, but the light bends and so on. So these have adaptive, they have literally little motors on them that adjust the shape of the mirrors to correct the picture, just like my glasses do. Okay. We have a new telescope that's going to go out. It's not going to be in Earth orbit. It's called the James Webb Telescope. It has a size of a 6.5 meter mirror, much, much larger than the Hubble. It's not going to be in Earth orbit. It's going to be in orbit around the sun at a wider orbit than the Earth is. So it's not even going to be anywhere close to the Earth. It's going to be on the moon in terms of its orbit around the sun. And it has a big shade on it, and it's going to, which is going to block the sun, and it's going to get incredible views of the cosmos. It has a more sensitive mirror, a larger mirror, and all of these things. So what we're going to see in the next 5 years, folks, is we're going to see dramatic, dramatic exponential increase in the amount of information we have about our universe. And there's a lot of hope among people who are in the scientific field that we're going to find extraterrestrial life and things like that. I don't know about all that, but that's the world we live in. That's where we are with our understanding of the cosmos. Here's a picture of a galaxy. This lies down near the center of our in the southern sky. If you were to look for it today, it's not visible tonight because it's that far south. We'll see it later in the year. But I'm just going to point a few things out about it. You can see that it has a couple of spiral arms there. You see those really bright pink sections in there? Whenever you see that, those bright pink sections, that means that's where stars, they believe, scientists theorize that stars are forming, okay? And if you see all of those dark spots, those are actually lanes of dust that are blocking the light, okay? If we were looking at the Milky Way galaxy, Our sun would be one of those tiniest pinpricks of light about two-thirds of the way out from the center of the galaxy. We are minuscule on a cosmic scale. And remember, this is one of how many? 100 billion estimated galaxies that are out there. This is called the southern pinwheel, also known as Messier 83. Let's just take our sun. I'm going to give you a few facts and then we'll draw some conclusions here. How many Earths would fit inside of our sun? Anybody? 1.3 million. Okay. 1.3 million. Our sun's pretty big. Okay. I'm going to tell you about a star here that is in Canis Major, which means the big dog. that could contain 9.3 billion of our suns. Let's put a slide up here, Carol. That's the next slide, I think. Okay. There was another one. Let's see if it's there. Okay. So there's Canis Majoris, which is a star in Canis Major, which is a constellation by Orion. And see the little square down on the lower left there, or little rectangle, which is a blow up there? There's a picture of our sun. Okay, remember how many Earths can fit inside of our sun? 1.3 billion. I mean, these stars out there are massive. Canis Majoris is late in its life. It's a reddish star. It's beginning to pulsate because it's using up all of its fuel. When stars begin to pulsate like that, they're late in their lives, they turn red, they get really big, and then eventually these large ones will explode and collapse into a very dense neutron star, which is about the size of the Earth, and it's super, has about the same density as that massive star, or a black hole, which we can't even see. Super, super massive sphere of matter that is theoretically there, but no one could ever see one because the light can't even escape a black hole. But we know they're there, believe they're there, because something, black holes hold galaxies together with their gravity. We can see the evidence of their existence, but we can't see them. So they're theoretical objects in many ways. But just like the wind, we can't see, but we know it's there. Black holes have so much gravity. If you were to fly a jet around Canis Majoris at 500 miles an hour, how long would it take you to go around the star? 1,100 years. Light goes around the Earth 7 times a second. How long does it take light to go around Canis Majoris? It goes 186,000 miles an hour. So light from Jesse, from me, my view of you, the light reflecting off of you is coming to me at 186,000 miles an hour. So it's a very short time period from me to you. It will take over 6 hours for light to go around Canis Majoris. It takes 14 seconds for it to go around the sun. It goes around our Earth 7 times a second. Every second, light can travel around our Earth 7 times. Takes 6 hours. Massive, massive, massive stars. So we are tiny. We are tiny. A little spaceship traveling through space with our own sun, our little personal moon. We get to see this moon come up at night and go around us every 28 days or so. And we get to travel around the sun every 365 and a quarter days. And then we have these other planets, you know, they're part of our system. We've got, you know, Mercury, Venus, obviously Earth, Mars, Jupiter, this giant gas planet with over 70 moons. We've got Saturn with the beautiful, beautiful rings. Let's go to the next slide. I think I've got one of Saturn there. And moons around it as well. But here we are with this tiny little piece of our universe. I'm going to tell you 2 gaping holes in modern theories about how we came to be. And astronomers, those who are in the field, will agree with this. These are large gaps in our understanding. God-sized holes. The first one is that our universe, for some unknown reason, unpredicted by Newton's theories of gravity and all these physical laws, is expanding. When you look at distant objects in our universe, they're moving away from us. And the more distant they are, the faster they're moving away from us. And this was observed for the first time in the 1920s, and then it's been confirmed over and over and over and over with subjective measurements. And I won't go into how they measure, but the universe is expanding. So this is the opposite of what we would expect, because gravity tends to pull things together, right? Objects that have mass have gravity. You and I have gravity because we're massive objects. The larger the object is, the more massive it is, the more gravity it has. And the heavier the object is, the more massive it is, the more gravity it has. The moon has a certain amount of gravity. It has a sixth of the gravity of the Earth, right? The guys who are moonwalking, they could just kind of just bounce along like that, right? Then you have the Earth, and then you have much more massive planets that would probably just lay us out flat like a pancake, right? Just, there's Dallas. He's about half an inch thick, and he's about 15 feet long. So one of the great mysteries is the universe is expanding. So why is it expanding? Nobody can explain it. So astronomers, physicists have come up with calculations to try to understand what could account for these massive expansion. For at the level that we see, there's a tremendous amount of force required to, number one, overcome gravity, and then number two, cause the reverse thing to happen, which is expansion. Okay? In fact, there's so much energy required to do that that the estimates today are that 70% of the mass/energy in the universe is this mysterious force, 70% of what we know in our universe, and they call it dark energy. They don't know what it is, but they gave it a name. Okay? It's unseen, it's invisible, we see its effects, but nobody can explain it. In fact, it violates all of the physical laws that we're bound by here on Earth. Dark energy. Big hole. I'm going to tell you another big hole here. We're just going to go through two of them here. There's a long list. Now, the big hole is when you look out into space and you look at galaxies like this, like the one we saw there. Nobody can explain the behavior of the galaxy based on the gravitational pull of the objects in it. In other words, it's behaving in a way that doesn't match what we see. What we see tells us there's a whole bunch more mass in that galaxy than we can see. Because of the behavior of its components, it would not hold together, it would fly apart if it didn't have a huge amount of gravitational pull within it that is out of sight to us. So if you take all the suns, and you take all the stars, and you take all the pieces that we can see, there's not nearly enough gravity to hold this thing together and cause its behavior in the way it's observed. So, scientists have come up with another one. Dark matter. There's this matter out there, which is invisible to us, that must be there because we see it's affecting the behavior of the visible objects. Okay? So, 70% of the universe, as we know it, is dark energy. 25% of it is dark matter. And what about that last 5%? That's the stuff that we can see. That's part of that 5%. You and I are part of the 5%. These pews are part of that 5%. The Earth is part of the 5%. The sun is part of the 5%. The moon. The 100 billion galaxies that we can see are part of that 5%. They call that baryonic matter. Okay? Now, is that mind-blowing? So we can explain and we can see and we can view objects that represent 5% of what we believe is out there. And what we believe that other 95% is out there is because of the behavior of what we can see. Behavior of what we can see doesn't make sense without that other 95% present. Isn't that amazing? Scientists don't have a name for either one of those. The dark energy, dark matter are names given so we can talk about it. But what are they? Why is this happening? What's out there? One more thing, and then we'll just wrap up here. You know, we hear about the Big Bang theory of how, you know, the cosmos came to be. It's widely accepted because it's the best explanation that people can come up with. It accounts for more, it answers more of the questions about how, of what we observe than any other theory out there. So it's accepted because that's what it does. It's not accepted because anyone can prove it, but it does. It's a theoretical model to try to answer the questions about what we observe. And it answers a lot more of those questions than any other models that we've come up with so far. So that's why did it get the name the Big Bang? Well, I told you a minute ago that we've observed that things are, the scientists have and astronomers have observed that it appears that the cosmos are expanding, our universe is expanding, right? So if it's expanding, then naturally you would think, well, let's trace these trails of these objects backward, and they all come back to a common source, okay? You start saying, well, this is going that way, and this is going that way, and this is going that way, and this is going that way. Well, let's see, where do they come from? Well, they come back to a common source, which we're the center of, right here, okay? Probably because we can only view light coming at us from our point in space. What about somebody? So we can see light coming to the Earth. The estimates of the most ancient light, which is coming from way out here, traveling to Earth, 13.6 billion years traveling from this point at the very edge of our visible universe, Earth. Okay, 13.6 billion. So if you ask an astronomer, scientist, how old is the universe, they'll say 13.6 billion years. Because that's the last light we can see. Once you get beyond that, you can't see anything more beyond that. How do they know it's 13.6 billion years? It's a whole other conversation. But I have always asked myself, well, what if I lived on one of those galaxies out on the edge of our universe? What would my view be from there? Would I be able to see the light from our sun? I don't know. Maybe I could see beyond and out into this other area, right? Where more light was coming at me from there, right? Lots and lots and lots and lots of big questions. Nobody knows the answer to. What if the universe, instead of being going like this, what if it pulsates like a heartbeat? And we just happen to be in a period of time when it's expanding. And we're drawing all these conclusions that we came from a Big Bang. I don't know, right? And what are we expanding into? And what came before the Big Bang? These are huge questions no one knows the answers to. Scientists, if you go online and you watch the scientists talk about this, they'll say, it came from this microscopic, minuscule, tiny point that was infinitely massive, and the whole universe came out of it. Yeah. So let me share a few thoughts here to wrap up. Per second. Yeah.
Without light, is there matter?
Without light, well. Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Recently, they discovered a black hole. They had actual images of it. Mm-hmm. It showed that the system was draining into the hole.
Correct.
And collapsed.
That's correct.
Could that be sort of like drains across the solar systems that are cleaning and clearing or expiring?
Yeah. So that picture you saw was taken. Multiple telescopes around the world. It was a combined image, computer combined. And the space in the middle was the black hole. You can't see that. All you can see is the surrounding area, which is being sucked into the black hole. Yeah. Yeah. There's lots to talk about. So my opinion, we have a couple of choices for our God. we can decide that our God is laws of physics, which came from some unknown source, that by their existence create more and more and more and more complex forms of life. They create this. They create you and me. They create all of the animals we see. They create light. They all came from basically physics, right? These foundational laws. And they have the effect of creating more and more and more complex life forms if you really believe that they created us. That's the leap you have to take, because that's your creator. Or you can believe in a creator God who has characteristics of love, of joy, who created us to share this with him, who created all the variety on earth, who created an earth that's habitable for people like us, that has 18% oxygen, that has water, that has a protective magnetic field around it, that has an atmosphere, that has its own moon. Like I said at the beginning, you can come to science with a belief in a creator. You can come to science with a belief to prove there is no God. For me, the decision is made somewhere else. For me, the decision is the gospel story. God sent his son for you and me. God loves us. God created us. Anyone who sent his son and who brought him to life and did what we know Jesus to have done here on this earth is great enough to create, and great enough to be the source of this. And I would say our existence is equal miraculous compared to something like this. It's beyond comprehension. And I take that gospel story and I take the God that I know because of it, and then I bring that to science, and I bring that paradigm to science, and then I look at science through that lens, and then who do I see then? I see a creator God. I see a God of endless variety. I see a God of love. I say a God who built a foundation for us as a people, a moral foundation. We didn't just evolve out of something and evolve laws and, you know, principles to live by. I see a God who has that in mind when he created us. That for me is very wonderful. Socially, politically, personally, he laid a foundation for us. We have a God who did all of that. And when we buy into that, we have a framework for life that brings us incredible joy, the ability to love deeply. You know, we've all been hurt by the world and the surroundings, but when we put God back into his place in the middle of our hearts, he begins to heal and heal and heal and bring healing. And we've all experienced that. So I just want you to celebrate with me today the fact that we are his creatures. We are created. Not only did he create us, but when we put him in the middle of our lives and make him the foundation of our lives, he will recreate us. And we will blossom in ways we could never have imagined as we live in communion with him. Friends, to, like I would encourage myself, to find a dark spot and plan for 2 or 3 or 4 hours just to go out there and look up and just be amazed and commune with our Creator. Let him do his healing work in you and me.